Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ooredoo Group's full year 2019 financial results investor call webcast. I will now hand over to Sarah Al-Sayed from Ooredoo Group. Madam, please go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Hello and welcome to Ooredoo's financial results call. My name is Sarah Al-Sayed from the investor relations team. As part of today's discussion, I'm pleased to introduce Ajay Bahri, our Group Chief Financial Officer, Andreas Goldau from the investor relations team, and Mark Douse from strategy team. We start with an overview of the group results, followed by a Q&A session. The presentation is available on our website, ooredoo.com, as well as on the webcast. Please do note the usual disclaimer on slide number two. To begin, I will now hand over to Ajay.
Thank you, Sarah, and thanks to everyone for joining today's call. We reported a robust set of results for the financial year 2019, driven by the careful execution of our digital transformation strategy. Our net profit for the year was 1.7 billion riyals, up 10% compared to the previous year. Growth was supported by robust EBITDA performance, a more favorable foreign exchange environment, as well as from the recognition of profit from the sale of 3,100 towers in Indonesia. Key to ensuring the sustainability of our business and the creation of long-term shareholder value is our state-of-the-art network, which we continue to enhance and expand. In 2019, our CapEx was 5.9 billion riyals, an increase of approximately 20% from the previous year, as we accelerate our 5G deployment in our mature markets and upgrade our coverage and increase capacity in our emerging markets. In our home market in Qatar, we applied 5G technology during the FIFA Club World Cup final in December 2019, with excellent stadium coverage and network quality. Driving efficiency and delivering seamless customer experiences form key aspects of our digital transformation strategy. We've delivered healthy EBITDA margins while increasing our customer base by 2% to 117 million. Revenue for the year remained stable at 29.9 billion riyals, as we continue to navigate the industry shifts from voice to data consumption, as well as macroeconomic and currency weaknesses in some of our markets. We also experienced a reduction in handset sale, which contributed positively to EBITDA margin during the year, which improved to 43% compared to 41% in the previous year. Our board recommended the distribution of a cash dividend of 0.25 riyals per share. Additionally, they have approved a sustainable and progressive dividend policy for the company, aiming for a dividend payout ratio in the range of 40%-60% of normalized earnings. Moving on to the next slide. Slide number five. We maintained group revenues for the year, like I said, at a healthy 29.9 billion riyals, testament to our ability to manage the industry-wide shift from voice to data consumption. Our service revenue increased year-on-year. Our results for the year were achieved despite currency depreciation, macroeconomic instability in some of our markets, and intense price competition in other regions. Revenue for Q4 2019 increased 8% compared to the same quarter in the previous year. We also witnessed a reduction in handset sale, which contributed to the improvement of the EBITDA margin for 2019 to 43% from 41% earlier. 2019 EBITDA margin also impacted by IFRS 16. EBITDA increased 5% and 11% respectively for both the full year and quarter for 2019 compared to the same period last year. Growth was driven by ongoing implementation of our efficiency program, changes in product mix, as well as the implementation of IFRS 16. Excluding this FX impact, Revenue increased 1% and EBITDA increased 6% year on year. Let's move to slide 6. Net profit rose 10% in 2019 compared to the previous year, supported by a robust EBITDA performance, favorable FX environment, in addition to the recognition of profit from the sale of 3,100 towers in Indonesia. Good performances in Qatar, Iraq, Tunisia, Kuwait, and Indonesia, a more favorable FX environment, partially offset by provisions and negative impact from the implementation of the IFRS 16 on the net profit. On slide 7, let's take a look at CapEx and free cash flow. Our CapEx for the period increased by 20% to 5.9 billion riyals as we expanded the reach of our network and deployed the latest technologies. The sale of 3,100 towers in Indonesia has enabled to accelerate our investment in the country in line with our strategy to develop higher value base. While in our more developed markets, we continue to roll out 5G. Capital expenditure represents an essential part of our strategy to deliver long-term growth by deploying the latest technologies in our markets. Furthermore, our global sourcing strategy enabled us to optimize CapEx by taking advantage of Ooredoo Group's scale. Free cash flow for the year decreased by 20% to 4 billion riyals as a result of higher investments in the network. Moving on to the next slide. Our customer base increased 2% to 117 million, driven by increased customer acquisitions in Indonesia, Myanmar, Kuwait, and Tunisia, as our refreshed Indonesia strategy continues to deliver results. Next slide, please. We continue to maintain a healthy and well-balanced debt profile. Net debt decreased 12% to 25 billion riyals, impacted by the implementation of IFRS 16. Excluding the impact of IFRS 16, net debt decreased 14% while we maintained our course of deleveraging. During the year, we were able to negotiate a new banking covenant threshold for net debt to EBITDA from 4 times to 4.5 times, taking into account the IFRS 16 impact on our financials. Our net debt to EBITDA ratio is at 1.8 times. Without IFRS 16 impact, it would be 1.5 times, which is within our long-term guidance of between 1.5 and 2.5 times. This guidance remains unchanged. Group debt remains mainly at a corporate level, largely in Qatar, followed by Indonesia, and then a smaller percentage allocated to the other opcos. As a reminder, debt at the opco level is kept primarily in local currency. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 10, dividends. Our board recommended the distribution of a cash dividend of 0.25 riyals per share to be approved at the AGM to be held on 4th March. The Ooredoo board approved a sustainable and progressive dividend policy for the company, aiming for a dividend payout in the range of 40% to 60% of normalized earnings. The payout ratio for 2019 is around 50% in line with our dividend policy. Let's move to slide 11. Revenue growth for the year was flat, so it came at the top end of our guidance range. In 2020, we expect growth in the range of minus 1.5% to plus 1.5%. EBITDA growth was at 5%. Adjusted for IFRS 16, it would be down 3%, slightly better than the full year 2019 guided range of minus 7 to minus 4%. We expect growth in 2020 to be in between -2% and +1%. CapEx for the year was 5.9 billion riyals within our guided range of 5.5 billion to 6.5 billion riyals. The range remains unchanged for the next year. Let's move to slide number 13 for an operational review of our opcos. Starting with Qatar, in our home market of Qatar, we continue to pave the way for 5G adoption while enhancing our portfolio of digital services contributing to the growth in our postpaid customers. We demonstrated the power of 5G with the flawless application of 5G stadium technology during the final round of the FIFA Club World Cup held in Doha in December last year. Our innovations extended beyond our telecommunications offerings, with Ooredoo Money, our mobile payment solution, being recognized as the best global mobile solution in 2019 by MoneyGram. Financially, revenue was down 6% due to reduced handset sales and partially offset by growth in the business-to-business segment. Our EBITDA margin increased to 54% during the year, up from 52% in 2018. EBITDA growth was supported by a favorable mix between service revenue and handset sales, as well as improved efficiencies and positive impact of IFRS 16. Sequentially, the revenue increased 7%, supported by strong performance from the B2B segment. EBITDA margin was impacted partly due to revenue growth coming from lower margin projects and timing of marketing activities. Let's move to slide 14, Indonesia. Indosat Ooredoo delivered a robust set of results in 2019, driven by our renewed commercial strategy and accelerated network deployment. Revenue increased 14% in 2019 compared to the previous year to 6.7 billion riyals. As we target higher value customers and a lower churn rate, Indosat Ooredoo's EBITDA margins improved to 43% from 33% a year earlier. Accordingly, EBITDA grew by 47% in 2019 compared to the previous year to 2.9 billion riyals, supported by careful cost optimization initiatives. Indosat Ooredoo's customer base grew by 2% in 2019 compared to the previous year to 59.3 million. The sale of 3,100 towers in Indonesia will enable us to accelerate our investments in our network. The number of our 4G base transceiver stations already grew to 29,000 at the end of 2019. Quarter on quarter, Indosat Ooredoo's revenue increased 11%. EBITDA margin was lower due to certain one-off reversals in Q3 and timing of year-end provisions and marketing activities in Q4. Post-period, we unveiled the next phase of the execution of Indosat's strategy to create a more agile business with a sharper focus on its customers. Moving on to the next slide, Iraq. In Iraq, we upgraded our entire network to support our 4G, our 3G customers. During the year, we added more than 500 new sites. HSL reported revenue growth of 3% to 4.6 billion riyals in 2019, while EBITDA was down slightly to 2 billion riyals due to network expansions. Q4 revenue was impacted by the internet shutdown in October and November, which negatively affected data revenues while contributing positively to our total revenue through voice revenue. Consequently, and also benefiting from seasonality, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, revenue rose 10%. As a result, the EBITDA was higher, partly offset by higher year-end provisions and timing of marketing spend. Asiacell's customer base remains stable at 14.2 million. We've completed preparations for the launch of 4G in anticipation of the LTE license award, though no official timeline has been finalized yet. On to slide 16, Oman. Our operations in Oman remain stable. The revenue for 2019 was up 1% at 2.7 billion riyals, while EBITDA increased by 2% to 1.5 billion riyals. During the year, we invested in expanding the reach of our network. Our broadband network now covers all wilayas across the Sultanate. And our SuperNet network reaches over 98% of Oman's population. Ooredoo Oman's customer base was stable at 2.9 million. Quarter on quarter, Ooredoo Oman's revenue rose 3%, primarily due to device sales, which has also resulted in lower overall EBITDA margin. Let's move to slide 17, Kuwait. Kuwait remains a saturated market with strong price competition. However, we are beginning to see some early signs of market stabilization. Our focus has been on differentiation through experience and network quality as we continue to deploy 5G. EBITDA during the year increased 31%, supported by an improved product mix, efficiency initiative, and a positive impact from the implementation of the accounting standard IFRS 16. Full-year revenue was down 5% to 2.8 billion in 2019 compared to previous year, partially due to a reduction in handset sales and competitive market dynamics. Our focus on experience earned us the recognition of Best Digital Service at the Telecoms World Middle East Awards 2019 for ANA, our brand new fully digital mobile experience. Consequently, Ooredoo Kuwait's customer base increased to 2.6 million in 2019, up 12% compared to the previous year. Sequentially, revenue increased 11% due to higher equipment sales. Supported with cost efficiency in the quarter, EBITDA increased 13%. Slide 18, Algeria. You will see that the situation in Algeria continues to be challenging with difficult economic conditions and political instability, a persistent price war, and an overall shrinkage in the market. As a result, Ooredoo Algeria's revenue declined 9% in 2019 compared to the previous year to 2.5 billion riyals. Ooredoo Algeria's customer base was 12.6 million at the end of 2019. Throughout the year, we continued to strengthen and expand our 4G network. We installed 1,400 new technical sites across the country and became the first operator in the country to cover all 48 wilayas with 4G. Our 3G and 4G network leadership was confirmed by Ookla during the year. At the same time, the development of our digital ecosystem to drive 4G adoption continues to gain traction with our Haya Music application becoming the leading music streaming service in Algeria in 2019. The service gained international recognition with the Bronze TV Award. Quarter on quarter, we saw relatively stable revenue and EBITDA. Slide 19, Tunisia. Tunisia delivered another robust set of results despite challenging market conditions and currency depreciation. We grew EBITDA by 15% to 682 million Qatari riyal in 2019 compared to last year. Due to improved operational efficiencies, careful cost management, digitization, and the positive impact of IFRS 16. Revenues increased by 7% in local currency terms, supported by our push to drive data usage and convert prepaid customers to higher value postpaid customers. In Qatari riyals, revenues decreased 3% due to a 10% year-on-year depreciation of the Tunisian dinar. Our customer base grew by 1% to 9.2 million, affirming our position as the number one telecom player by customer market share. Sequentially, revenue declined due to seasonality, and consequently, EBITDA was also lower. Moving to slide 20, Myanmar. In Myanmar, we continue to execute on our digital transformation strategy to streamline operations and improve customer experience. As a result, our customer base grew 20% during 2019 compared to the previous year, reaching a total of 11.5 million customers. Revenue for 2019 was 1.1 billion riyals, down 16% compared to previous year, partly due to a 6% depreciation of the Myanmar Kyat in 2019 and the entrance of the fourth player, which led to aggressive price competition in the market. EBITDA increased by 42%, mainly due to the positive impact from the implementation of the new accounting standard IFRS 16. Quarter on quarter, the aggressive pricing competition continued, impacting revenues and margins. Our digital initiatives maintain positive momentum, with the My Ooredoo app having monthly active users growing to 1.7 million users from 1.3 million in the previous quarter. This concludes the presentation. I will now hand back to the IR team.
Thank you, Ajay. Before we go into the Q&A session, the Ooredoo IR team, Andreas and myself, would like to thank you for supporting us in the Qatar Exchange IR Excellence Award. We really do appreciate your votes, which help us to become the most awarded company in Qatar. Your constructive feedback helps us to improve further. A very successful event last year was our Capital Markets Day. We hope to host you again this year, and we have tentatively scheduled it for the 21st of September in Doha. Details to be confirmed closer to the date. Now we can start the Q&A part. Questions can be asked on the webcast or over the phone. Operator, will you now please explain to the participants how to ask questions?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, to participate in our written Q&A, just type your question into the Ask a Question text area, then click the Submit button. Thank you. The first question comes from Jonathan Milan from Waha Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you very much for the presentation, for taking the time for the call. My question is on the free cash flow, net debt, and dividends. I understand that you want to keep within that dividend bracket, but why is it so low? Dividends seem very disappointing, especially when your net debt to EBITDA is even less than 1.5 times EBITDA, your net debt, given your net debt is only 15 billion. Why are you keeping it so low? Are you preparing for an acquisition? Because even if you have a surge in CapEx because of 5G or what have you, you have more than a strong enough cash flow and a very low leverage to do so. And my second question is around the cash levels. Why would you keep 30 billion in debt, paying 1.7, 1.8 billion a year in interest expense, while also keeping 14.5 to 15 billion in cash, making barely 1% interest? I mean, you are paying 11, 12% interest on your net debt. Wouldn't it be in your best interest and our best interest as shareholders for you to at least pay down a bit more of that debt, reduce your interest bill, and not have $4 billion sitting on the balance sheet earning barely 1%?
Okay, as far as the dividend question is concerned, I think the payout ratio is based on normalized earnings. And you will see that this year we had a couple of large one-off income coming into the company, the biggest one being the sale of 3,100 towers in Indonesia. You can see the other income scheduled in the financials, the total net profit coming from that on a total basis of 668 million riyals. A lot of that money is to be invested back by Indosat and reduce their debt, and then use it for investing back in the network in Indonesia. So when we dividend decisions taken, I think a lot of factors are looked into, including leverage, like you pointed out, but also the investment plans for different operations. Also, we normalize the net profit to take out some one-off items here. So we acknowledge the leverage has gone down, and the dividend payout ratios of 40 to 60% take that into account. In the past, sometimes we've been on the lower end of that when the leverage was higher. if you see historical payout ratios. So in this range, as we're more comfortable with the leverage, and if the profits normalized on an increasing trend, then the payout ratio would be on the higher end of the range. So the range basically gives flexibility, taking into account the needs of the company, and that's the way I think one should look at that. As far as the cash levels are concerned, the excess cash, which is on our balance sheet, is earning more than the cost of debt. That's why it is sitting as cash. Some of the interest rates that you get in the region here are higher than the cost that we paid. If that reverses, of course, a lot of our cash is related to RCFs, which can be repaid at short notice here. There's some of the other cash which sits in some other countries outside of Qatar is either operationally required or in a place like Iraq, it has limited ability to earn interest until it's upstreamed to us. We've had some good upstreaming of dividends and from Iraq last year. So historically, if you followed us, we've had some issues of upstreaming cash from Iraq, which has changed since 2019. And we can see now slowly cash being upstreamed there. So apart from the cash sitting in Iraq, I think the other places, it's either operationally required or in Qatar, it earns more than some of the interest that we pay.
But it also probably earns less than some of the interest that you pay as well. Or else, I mean, your whole debt is twice the cash, whereas your interest expense is eight times your interest income. I mean, it just seems that you could optimize it.
If you could optimize it, we would do it. And the thing is, if you have cash sitting and you cannot repay a bond which is due, which has got higher cost, the option is to pay down a revolving credit facility, because you have to not theoretically look at the highest cost until you can repay it off. What you can use with the cash is what is seen and a decision is taken in. If a debt which is more expensive can be repaid, obviously that will be prioritized.
So when the bonds are due, whenever a bond is due in 2021, 2023, you'll pay it down and you won't issue bonds in lieu of this one. So you won't replace it with new bonds.
I can't give just an open-ended answer like this. I think depending on when we have to repay a bond, we have nothing due this year. We have something due next year. And very often we optimize what is available in the market. We don't have to issue a bond to repay a bond. We look at various options that we have, including cash available with us versus the pricing we may get from the bank market. And in the bond market, we may look at just the crude or the standard bonds. So we optimize after looking at all these options and only then decide which is the most optimal way to refinance or repay debt.
Okay, just one last thing, if I may, on the dividend. I mean, again, you make 13 or 12 billion in EBITDA, less the capex, you're still left with a decent 6 billion, less taxes, 5 billion, less interest expense, less dividends, you're still left with a decent 3 billion free cash flow even after paying dividends, or 2.5 billion. I mean, should we expect you to just maintain a cap of, say, almost a billion on the dividend and continue to repay debt until your net debt drops to less than one times EBITDA, or are you saving some firepower for an acquisition?
I think the way to look at this is not looking at consolidated EBITDA and consolidated CapEx. The net profit available to Ooredoo shareholders is after excluding the minority interests. So the right way to look at it is look at net profit attributable to Ooredoo shareholders.
Yeah.
And let me make the point and then maybe I'll give you a chance to ask a further question. Looking at gross EBITDA will not give you the implication of what's available at Qatar level as for the Ooredoo shareholders. So that's one factor I think in your analysis maybe you can look at. If you have all the data, you know what our ownership percentages are. So you can look at the EBITDA based on proportionate EBITDA. Then the number becomes smaller than the number that you quoted.
I mean, no, I have done that. I mean, I have looked at proportional EBITDA or attributable EBITDA less minorities and attributable CapEx less the minority share of CapEx, and you guys still generate an FCFE yield of 15, 16, or 18%, which is one of the highest in the telecom space, at least in the Middle East that I know of, and yet you pay a dividend of 3.5%, while attributable free cash flow to equity after minorities, also attributing the minorities capex, is in the mid to high teens, and yet you have one of the lowest dividend yields. And that will maybe tie into why Ooredoo Group, despite having a very robust operations across the globe, despite having one of the best presentations across all the other telecom operators, the best communication, is still trading at a massive discount to all the other incumbent operators, be it in, for example, Saudi or UAE, or even secondary operators in UAE or Saudi, such as Mobily or Du, which don't generate nearly half as a decent cash as Ooredoo Group. Your FCFE yield is in the mid-teens.
So let me tell you how we do this analysis. We look at the actual cash flow generated and upstreamed at Qatar level for the benefit of Ooredoo shareholders. And that cash flow is then adjusted for the expenses at a group level. And then what's available is available for the dividends or repayment of debt. So the proxy that you're looking at EBITDA minus CapEx, doesn't reflect everything in the right way. Not all cash sitting in the opcos is upstreamable. I've given an example to you of Iraq already. And even the other cash, which is not yet upstreamed, for example, if you're looking at Indosat, you'll get $450 million extra by end of this year, which is coming from the sale of towers, for example, right? So all these things have to be adjusted. And then, of course, we have to balance the repayment of debt versus the dividend payment. So we are prudent. Now you have a dividend policy which we didn't have earlier, right? That clearly shows you the intention of the board to give some commitment. So I think this should be seen more as a positive trend. Historically, we didn't have that guidance for the investors. So clearly with this commitment, which clearly says it's a sustainable and progressive policy, should give you comfort that going forward, the policy will be implemented.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, just one last thing. Any acquisitions or any entries into new countries? For in the medium term or short term?
We talked about this in the past, and we are not actively looking for M&A right now. And regional expansion is not on our cards. What we've talked about is that in-country consolidation, where it makes sense, will be definitely something we might look at, but not actively looking to go out there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Nonal Dervish from Arcom Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the results, for the presentation, and congrats on the results. I have just one quick question. What was the impairment in Q4, the $350 million about?
The impairments done in Q4 is a combination of a few things. And you'll see that the three, four notes referred to in the financial statements, 12, 13, 16, 17, and 23, I think, which covers partly investment in associates, also covers financial assets, also covers intangibles, including goodwill and licenses. So it's a combination of various different types of assets which have been reviewed, and based on which this year-end impairment has been put in place.
Okay, thanks. And if I may, just one quick other question. I missed a small part of the presentation. What was the reason behind the erosion in the Q4 margin in Qatar operations?
In Qatar operation, the percentage has gone down primarily because of certain sales which were low-margin sales. We see the revenues up, actually, because of B2B sales, but some of the B2B and ICT business sales margins are lower. So as a percentage, you see a lower margin despite higher revenue.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you again, if you have any comments or questions, please press 01 on your telephone keypad to enter a queue. As a reminder, to participate in our written Q&A, please submit on the webcast platform. Thank you. The next question comes from Tilia Ibrahimova from Citibank UK. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for the opportunity. I had three questions. One is actually a follow-up on Qatar EBITDA. You mentioned that the margin erosion is driven by low-margin B2B sales. Can I just so if we're looking at the top-line performance, it's improving in the fourth quarter, at least looking at the service revenue. If I take into account your comment on B2B sales, it seems like the improvement is driven by B2B low margin business, and it appears that am I right in thinking that underlying consumer business consumer is continuing to decline? And what are your expectations on the consumer side going forward, or maybe what has driven the weakness so far in 2019, and how much of that do you think is likely to continue, could improve, or could get worse on the consumer side in Qatar? Second question is on Iraq. You mentioned that in the presentation that there has been change in the revenue mix because of the restrictions on internet access, and I'm just wanted to clarify whether it has driven any change in revenue and EBITDA for the quarter, year-on-year trends. If I'm just looking at the fourth quarter versus the first 9 months of the year, fourth quarter is really strong, both in revenue and EBITDA. So I'm just wondering how much of that is related to this regulatory request to limit access, and how much of that is underlying growth in demand, maybe consumption. And last is technical question, just to clarify, how do you define normalized earnings for the dividend? Thank you.
Okay, I think on the Qatar performance in Q4, one of the main reasons is B2B, but in my, I think, script, I talked about also marketing activities timing. So it's a combination of two things there in Q4. So the margins are down by due to the mix of product as well as some higher OPEX. But if the underlying dynamics are talked about, which you correctly picked up, is that the mobile consumer business has not been growing. The growth is actually coming more from the B2B and the ICT side. That's been the factor in the competition we get from Vodafone historically as well, and that has not changed. If at all, it's been a little more intense during the year. So that trend, I think, which we see in 2019 is expected to continue in 2020 as well. So pressure on consumer, but potentially growth in B2B coming partly also with the advent of the 2022 World Cup and the impact of that on business growth. Yeah. In case of Iraq, the change of revenue basically for 2 months of October and November was the decline in data revenue offset by increase in voice revenue. So it was only for those 2 months when there was an internet shutdown. However, the big increase that you see in Q4 is also driven by seasonality. Normally, this is the time when there's a festival season called Arbainia in Iraq, and as a result of which the revenue generally goes up. Yeah. So it's a combination of these two things that you see Q4 revenue is going up. So both of these are one-off and should be seen more seasonal rather than repetitive in Q1 2020. And your last question was on normalized profits for the purpose of dividend. And so the idea there really is to make sure any large one-off positive or negative is adjusted when we look at the profit. So we're not talking about small adjustments, small one-off adjustments, anything which is significant, like in the case of 2019 profits. We've highlighted that there was a large profit coming from sale of towers in Indonesia, which is also clarified and detailed in the notes to the accounts. So if you look at other income notes, something significant would normally will be clarified in the financial statements as well. So we don't intend to make large adjustments which are not visible to the public. There will be things like this which will be adjusted.
Thank you. And can I just follow up on Qatar? If going forward, if we're looking at the EBITDA margin performance, where do you think it is sustainable? The sustainable level is? Is it above low 50s? Is it sustainable?
I think Qatar has been performing. I think if you look at this quarter, there were some timing issues as far as the expenses concerned. So there were some one-off year-end expenses as well. So I think we should not look at the 2000 Q4-19 as a sustainable level. Rather than if you look at the full-year performance, I think that would be a more sustainable level because of the seasonality and timing. So I think 50 and above is definitely something which we expect to sustain in Qatar.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Thank you. The next question comes from Karim Sharif from EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
One is on the competitive environment in Iraq. Could you please shed some light on that? And two is on the turnaround in Indosat. How is that going, and what's the plan for using the proceeds from the tower sale? And that's it. Thank you.
Okay, see, the Iraq competitive dynamics is business as usual there. The change which is happening there really is the possibility of 4G coming there. And although the timing of the license has not still been officially announced, there's an expectation that could be imminent. I think that is what will change the competitive dynamics there. We are ready in terms of our deployment of the network to be 4G ready. We've been working on that. But nothing unusual in terms of the Iraq dynamics in quarter four. In fact, the unusual thing really was the two things we've talked about, the shutdown of the network, where voice went up, data went down, and the seasonality from the Albania festival there. Indosat turnaround is going as per plan, and as you can see in the results, EBITDA is up 47% compared to last year. So everything is, in terms of direction, positive, but still a lot needs to be done there, and you've probably heard about the recent reorganization as well, which you'll get more details from Indosat in due course, which is part of the digitization strategy to be agile and nimble, and also look at efficiencies where we can work with partners, for example, managed services. That's all going as per plan, but 2020 is also a critical year for us to continue the turnaround trajectory as we've done in 2019. The proceeds from the tower sales will be basically used to deleverage and also to invest back in the network. So these will be two main areas for the use of proceeds.
That's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to remind you that if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, to participate in our written Q&A, please submit on the webcast platform. Thank you. There are no further questions in the conference call. I now give back the floor to the speakers for the webcast questions.
We have a couple of questions from the webcast from Shaber Arayan Investment. First question is, leverage is the low end of guidance, so why was dividend payout ratio cut? What does progressive dividend mean? Qatar Riyal's payout increase each year or just no cuts?
Okay, I think, like I'd explained in one of the earlier questions, that the normalized profit is what one needs to look at. In this case, we had a large one-off profit coming from sale of towers in Indonesia, which positively impacts the net profit. but the proceeds for that are not meant for dividend payout, but rather to deleverage in Indonesia and invest back in the network there. So these are the type of adjustment which will be done when we look at the payout ratio. So the net profit we look at would be a lower number than the reported net profit. And I explained in the question from Delia that the best way to get a sense of that is to look at our financial statements, especially notes to accounts, especially on other income, if anything is significant, we'll be explaining that in those notes to give you an indication of what type of adjustments might be possible in normalization there. As far as sustainable and progressive, the terms in the dividend policy are concerned, which basically means the intention is to maintain dividends, the sustainability part, and progressive is indication that we intend to grow. So sustainable means we don't intend to cut dividends, but we want to sustain and grow within the bounds of the dividend payout ratio that we've given.
The other question is key factors squeezing Qatar margins, the outlook, details on Indonesia restructuring and strategy. What is the N2020 leverage target?
I think the Qatar margins point I'd covered earlier on Q4 and also clarified that 50% and above is sustainable is the expectation from us. That covered the first 2 points, I think. Indosat restructuring, I alluded to it in my comment that that's been announced recently, and that is part of the overall turnaround strategy. And as the company becomes more digital and becomes more agile, some of the restructuring that you've heard about will happen, and their focus will be more to get into better customer experience, a more digital experience, the right skill set in the organization to be digital, work with partners, for example, outsourcing and managing some network services. So efficiency, digitization, revenue growth are the cornerstones of the strategy for Indosat. Leverage targets, normally we don't give in our guidance. The guidance is limited to revenue, EBITDA, and CapEx.
That's all for webcast questions.
Any other questions on the phone line?
No, there are no further questions.
Thank you, operator, and thank you all for joining today's call. Please refer to the Ooredoo Investor Relations website for additional updates. Follow us on Twitter at OoredooIR, or feel free to contact the Investor Relations team if you need any further information. We look forward to your future participation in our next update, probably around 29th April 2020. Meanwhile, thank you again for your continued interest in Ooredoo.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our webcast call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.